Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nathan Ramsey, Executive Director at Landisky Regional Council, and I appreciate you joining us for our weekly Landisky COVID-19 calls. It's almost been a year since we started these. It's about the 1 year anniversary of when the pandemic started impacting our region, our state, and our country. So we've been holding these calls to try to share information to help everyone better adapt and respond to the many challenges that COVID-19 has brought to our community. Before we get started, just a few ground rules. This call is being recorded. We're a little behind in posting these calls on the Landisky website, but we'll try to catch up with that. But they are able to be found on our COVID-19 page, and we have all the resources from the calls, any presentations on that page. Everyone should be muted on the call. If you have any questions, please enter those in the chat, and we'll try to respond to those. And we're trying to do that for security purposes. Early on in the pandemic, we were Zoom bombed, so we're trying to be as secure as we can, and as well as having public access and making our meetings available to the public. At today's meeting, we're going to have Drew Christie with the governor's office. Drew serves as the Western representative of Governor Cooper. We appreciate Drew being with us. And then we'll have Dr. Michael Walden. Dr. Walden is a professor and economist at NC State University with the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. He's also a professor at the Poole School of Management in the graduate program, and is really one of the preeminent economist, thought leaders in our state. I was telling him earlier today, he did a great job. He appeared on Spectrum News, Capital Tonight, so you'll see Dr. Walden and many in the media and sources, and he's one of the go-to people that we rely on to help us gauge where we're at and what the future holds. Next week, we'll have representatives from the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners and North Carolina League of Municipalities to break down the impact of this of the $1.9 trillion stimulus bill for our local government. So cities, towns, and counties in the Landisky region are projected to receive about $130 million from that bill. There was, $130 billion in the bill for local governments, $65 billion for counties, and equivalent amount for cities and towns. And so we do have some preliminary numbers on the breakdown for each local government will receive, but a lot of details are still being worked out. And we'll hear from the experts next week on how to access those funds, what those funds can be used for, and any reporting and compliance requirements to receive those funds. So it will be a big impact to our local governments, and we want to be able to share that information. So right now, though, I want to turn it over to Drew Christie with the governor's office to give us an update. And Drew, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Nathan. And as always, thank you to Landisky Regional Council for hosting these meetings. As per usual, I'll start off going over COVID numbers and vaccine numbers and numbers, and then talk about the press conference that was held yesterday between Governor Cooper and the Senate and House leaders in the General Assembly to talk about schools reopening. But first, at 3 o'clock, Governor Cooper and members of the Coronavirus Task Force will be holding a press conference to talk about coronavirus and issues. And so I think it may be worthwhile, I'm giving a wink, wink, nod, nod, for people to tune into that. So you can find that on your local PBS stations or through DPS's emergency management site and watch it there as well. But first, I'll go over COVID numbers here. If we look at the numbers overall, and yes, I think nationwide we've reached a full year as of today for the coronavirus pandemic. And I think in next week or so, or the next week or so a year ago, I think was when our first case in North Carolina hit. But as of today, we have had a total of 879,825 total cases in North Carolina, with a total of 2,061 new cases reported. There have been almost 10.7 million tests completed, and there were 40,807 new tests yesterday. So it brings our positivity rate to about a little under 4%. So our positivity rate is tracking continually lower and lower. So that's very good news. Yes, the vaccine is out there and we're getting them out fast as we can, but we have to remember what we know works are the three W's: to wear a cloth face covering, to wait 6 feet apart from one another, and to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds frequently. If we continue to do the three W's while the vaccine's rolling out, we can continue to get the positivity rate down and keeping it on this downward trajectory. So that's what we need to remember is, yes, the vaccine's out there, but we can't relinquish the measures that we know work also, or the three W's. And if we look at unemployment numbers here, there have been almost $10.5 billion paid out by the Division of Employment Securities, with a total of 3.4 million claims filed. And I think there have been, 1.5 million claimants. So all those numbers are tracking very well. DES is getting the money out that they can. And I know the federal government just passed the coronavirus relief bill yesterday, which I believe will add an additional $300 a week of unemployment to people. So that will help with people that are still out of work due to the pandemic. If we move over to vaccine data here, and I will address what Commissioner Chapman was talking about as well earlier, right before the call started, that, you know, yes, we're working to get more vaccines out. And Commissioner, thank you to you and your board for sending those letters to us. We greatly appreciate that, to letting us know what's going on in Transylvania County. So I'll break down what each county is getting this week for vaccine numbers, or for total vaccines. So Buncombe County this week is getting 4,710 vaccines. That's both Pfizer and Moderna combined. Let's see here. We'll go to Henderson would be next. Henderson County for this week is getting 2,070 vaccines. Madison County is getting 400 vaccines, and these are listed alphabetical. And Transylvania County this week is getting 2,070 vaccines. So that's very good news, great news for all four counties moving forward with this week, and hopefully as the supply chain for Johnson & Johnson ramps up, we'll be getting more of those. I think Secretary Cohen said in the press conference on Tuesday, she expects that we'll get more Johnson & Johnson vaccines by the end of the month. So that should help add to those numbers, because I believe overall the state is getting roughly around 220,000 vaccines. I think 124,000 of the Pfizer and about 94,000 Moderna vaccines week over week. So again, you know, when the vaccines first rolled out, North Carolina was only getting 120,000. So in roughly the 5 weeks that the vaccine, 5-6 weeks the vaccines have been rolling out on a consistent basis, North Carolina has almost doubled the quantity that we're getting. And that's due to everyone getting the message out there to get the vaccine, but also to all of the health departments and federally qualified health providers for administering the vaccine. So we greatly appreciate that. And if we break down the vaccine numbers based on county and how many, what's the percentage of population of the county that has been either partially vaccinated or fully vaccinated, we're doing really well here in the Landis-Sky region. Statewide, our average is 10.3 for fully vaccinated. If we look at Madison County, it has a 13.1% of all their residents that have been fully vaccinated, and 19.2% have been partially vaccinated. Buncombe County, fully vaccinated, is 10.4%. And 17.1% have been partially vaccinated. Henderson County has 11.5% of their population fully vaccinated, and 17.5% have been at least partially vaccinated. And then Transylvania County is at 11.7% fully vaccinated of their entire population, as well as 18.6% have been partially vaccinated. So those numbers, again, are tracking above the state average. So great job to everyone there. And so before I briefly talk about the school reopening, if anybody has any questions, feel free to put them in the chat box. I'll be happy to answer them as I can. And so moving on to school reopening, and I don't want to cover too much because the governor, we'll talk about it today, but the Senate yesterday passed the school reopening bill, and I believe maybe 2 hours ago, 2.5 hours ago, the House passed it. So it's fully passed the General Assembly. It's on its way to the governor's desk to be signed, and as the governor indicated yesterday, he will sign it. So it's really good news, and what it states is that all K through five schools will open fully at Plan A, and middle school and high school students will open at either Plan A or B. But if they plan to open at Plan A, they must submit a detailed plan to DHHS of how they're going to do that safely. And I believe that the effective date of this would be 21 days after it has been signed and ratified. So realistically, we're looking at one side or the other of April 1st, and you know, and or depending on if schools are in spring break during that time, it would start right after spring break. So that's kind of a brief highlight of the school reopening bill. And again, at the 3 o'clock press conference, I would bet my bottom dollar that Governor Cooper would be covering that in greater detail. So I don't want to delve too deeply into that. And with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, Drew, you're always welcome to give us a preview of the governor's announcement. And I know you don't want to upstage your boss. And so we respect that, and you're doing exactly what you should in that regard. So, but it is good that we're seeing reopenings opportunities in our economy and in the schools, and that General Assembly and the governor reached an agreement. That's positive for all of us. As Drew said, if anyone has any questions, please enter that in the chat. I think earlier I said AstraZeneca. So we have Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, is that correct? Those three vaccines are being utilized right now. AstraZeneca is not, but hopefully as more vaccines come on, are deployed, that those numbers will keep increasing. So a lot of positive news out there. But if anyone has any questions for Drew, again, please enter those in the chat. And we really appreciate Drew's willingness to share with us and to be so open and supportive. I'm honored now to introduce Dr. Mike Walden at NC State. Dr. Walden serves as the William Neal Reynolds Distinguished Professor and Extension Economist at the university. He's also a graduate economics faculty member with the Poole College of Management. His writings and his commentary are published in across the state in many media outlets and other sources. Again, Dr. Walden is one of our state's leading futurists, one that helps us guide where our state is headed and our economy. So, Dr. Walden, thank you for joining us today, and we're really grateful for you taking the time to share with us. So I'm asking you to unmute, so hopefully you'll be able to go ahead with your presentation. If you need to share a screen or anything, you should be able to do that.
And I will do that now, Nathan. And I think you're seeing my slide set. Well, thank you very much for inviting me again. Always happy to talk to people in the great part of our state, the western part of our state, so beautiful. My wife, Mary, and I enjoy always visiting. Maybe someday we'll be permanent visitors. I spoke to you, I don't know, a couple months ago, Nathan. So I want to give you an update on the economy. I want to talk about a lot about the job market, talk about whether we're out of the woods or not with this virus, and then talk about a little bit about the COVID-19 relief plan that was passed yesterday, and I believe it'll be signed by the president today. If we look at your area, and I'm using the Asheville metro region, which includes many of your counties, you right now are at 93% of your pre-pandemic employment. And I'm using February as the pre-pandemic month. And indeed, that's the month you can look at virtually any area of the country or certainly state. And you see that that's the peak employment of the last year plus. So you are right at 93% of your, in other words, your job totals now are 93% of what they were pre-pandemic. And you were down to 87%, something in that vicinity, 86, 87%. So you have climbed back, as has the state, as has the nation. Now, also on this slide, I have your employment broken down into the major economic sectors. And right off the bat, if you look at construction, retail, trade, transportation, utilities, financial services, professional and business services, the good news there is all of those sectors have fully recovered their jobs and then some, with the exception of retail, trade. Retail trade is right back where it was pre-pandemic. Construction's 4% over. Financial services, 2% over. Professional business services, also 2% over. Now, what some of these share is construction, of course, was deemed an essential service, so they stayed open. Likewise, transportation, utilities, in many cases, those were deemed essential services. But you've had a very strong comeback there. Financial services also deemed essential, but professional business services largely not, but that's where people have been able to continue working, like myself, using the technology that we're using now. Now, you do see some laggards, and I have those highlighted. The information sector, which is not tech production, I've got an asterisk there so you understand information in this configuration. This is from the Bureau of Economic Analysis of the federal government. Information sector includes publishing, media, data processing, and the internet. And of course, we've had some consolidation and continue to have consolidation in publishing and media. So that sector is still down 16% from what it was pre-pandemic. And of course, the other two sectors, well, the one sector was just devastated. Leisure hospitality, that's your, those are your restaurants, your bars, your travel, that got clobbered. That sector was under 50% of its pre-pandemic employment at the height of the pandemic. Now they have come back, they're at 74%. And then other services, your gyms would be in there, hair salons, nail salons, et cetera. So they're back a little better, 86%. There's nothing that strikes me as unusual with these numbers for your region as you would for the state, as you'd see for the state. You'd see pretty much the same pattern for the state, indeed for the nation. And right now, if we are lucky to continue to reopen, we'll see that leisure hospitality number climb, and we'll see that other services number climb. Although one of the things that economists think will happen in the post-pandemic world will be, particularly in those sectors that really got hit, like leisure hospitality, there's probably going to be some reconfiguration of jobs there. And we may not get to 100% anytime soon of jobs back. And of course, whenever I say this, I don't mean the exact same jobs are coming back. But we think that leisure hospitality people there, even in a place like restaurants, managers, owners are going to be looking at how can they restructure, quite frankly, to rely less on human labor, because they now have a fear, and we'll probably be living with this fear for at least a year, that, well, whenever the next virus comes, if you have people working for you that can get sick, that could be devastating for your business. You can have one person get and you sick and you have to be shut down. So I do think there's going to be some reconfiguration there. And I spoke about that, I think, the last time with you about how I think this is going to be the biggest challenge in our post-pandemic economy. And that is we're going to see different kinds of jobs appear, not all the same that we had. And that's going to cause some people to lose their job, not because they did anything wrong, but because that kind of job is not there anymore. And we need to worry about how do we get those folks retrained. And we're often talking about people who are mid-career. So we're not talking about all young people who can just go back to school. We're talking about people mid-career who have families, bills to pay. So I think that's going to be a challenge for our educational institutions. I think we're going to have to make reliance on apprenticeships, on the job training, et cetera. I think that's going to be one of our big challenges. If we go to one of the metrics that's closely followed, this is the unemployment rate. And we only have this out for North Carolina now through December. Beginning of the year, the federal government makes some adjustments in their data collection and data manipulation. So we're actually going to get two job reports out very soon, back to back, January and February for North Carolina. But if you look in December 2019, we were at 2.7% unemployment. February 2020, 16.2%. And then this is Asheville Metro, down to 5.5. And that's a good number, obviously. And in fact, it's a better number than the state. But you always like to compare yourself to where you were. You were about half of that number in December of 19. And we economists think that because of what I just said about the labor market and the change in the labor market, although we think that our overall level of economic activity is probably going to get back to pre-pandemic levels by the fall. We don't think unemployment rates are going to get back to pre-pandemic levels. And this is at any level, national, state, or local. And that's because of what I just finished saying about the job changes, the job disruptions, the need for retraining, et cetera. So I think that's we're going to see the challenges in the post-pandemic economy of the virus largely in the labor market. Now, right now, if you look at a variety of economic forecasts from public sector, private sector, they're fairly upbeat. We think that with the acceleration in vaccinations, I'm fortunate now, I've had both of mine, North Carolina is being able to ramp up. I think there's a big vaccination site today at the Corey Center in Greensboro. Some of my friends are going over there, appointments. So we're now seeing an acceleration in vaccinations. And now this is a little outside of my bailiwick because I'm getting into the medical science. But if you read some medical people, they say, look, when we can get the vaccination rate up, combine that with the fact there are people out there who had the virus and maybe didn't know it. They were lucky and they built up a natural immunity. When you combine those two, we may have what they call herd immunity by the fall. That is to say, largely people will have a country where even if the virus is still floating around, we won't get sick. And then eventually, since the virus can't latch itself onto anyone, the virus will disappear. I mean, that's the hope. And I think there's some reasonable expectation for that hope, although I will give a contrary case in just a minute. But if we're going in this direction, what you're going to see is business and consumer confidence both will go up. You're going to see increases in spending. You're going to see increases in hiring. And you combine that with the fact that Mary and I have had a lot of our friends say, boy, we're going to call you when we're ready to go out for dinner. We just can't wait to go out to dinner. You know, there are a lot of what economists call pent up demand. That is, people have not been able to do things, go out to dinner, go on vacations, go to local theaters or whatever. And they're itching to do that. So I think that when you have, if we continue this going in the right direction, you're going to see an explosion in consumer spending. And that's obviously going to help the economy. Now, I'm a positive person, but I do want to say it could go the opposite direction. I think our worst nightmare would be that the variants, and we know there are variants out there. In fact, I read probably a couple times a week about the South African variant was found here, the Brazilian variant was found there, the UK variant was found here. There are variants out there. These are just mutations on the original COVID-19. If we find that those are resistant to the vaccines and they start to spread, then we could go backwards. And I don't like to bring up the potential for bad news, but I do think we need to at least be aware that that is possible. At least the medical people I read indicate that is possible. I hope that I read one day that they're all agreed that no, it's not possible, then I can take away this slide. All right, let me talk a little bit about the new stimulus plan. And of course, polls show widely popular. We have still a lot of people out there who are hurting, who don't have jobs back, who don't have jobs. They're behind on their bills. We have a lot of businesses that clearly are hurting. So I certainly don't want to diminish the need for another stimulus bill, which was passed, because we didn't know how long this was going to last. And I think this is now the third stimulus bill that has come out of Washington. This is a big one, 1.9. It's not actually a record. The first one that was passed just a little less than a year ago, the end of March of 2020, was $2 trillion. So this came in a little under that, but it provides, as was mentioned, stimulus checks to a lot of people, although the income ranges were squeezed some there. Stimulus checks, people can spend or use however they want. The $300 supplement unemployment compensation. The new part of this is the $350 billion going to local and state governments. Now, local and state governments, especially states, did get money, but it was all with strings attached. It had to be spent in certain ways. This will be able to be, there'll be a lot more freedom for states and locals to spend. And I think, Nathan, I went over some of these numbers, but I think the estimate I just read this morning is that the state government, North Carolina state government, will get $9 billion out of this. And so there's going to be, and we were already in good shape, fortunately. A year ago, there was worries that state government was going to, maybe revenues were going to be down at 5%, 10%. Going to have a lot of layoffs, a lot of belt tightening. Fortunately, that didn't come to fruition. I think that was due to the fact that The federal government had already pushed in $39 billion. Again, all strings attached, but that money got spent. So there was sales tax, was income to some people. So you may recall about a month ago, the consensus forecast came out from the state level that predicted that North Carolina revenues were actually going to be up 17%. So we're in good shape at the state level. Now, there are a lot of local levels, local governments, especially those in areas of the state that aren't growing, that have really been hurt. So North Carolina's share of that $350 billion, I think, will be certainly welcomed by a lot of areas. Be interesting to see what at the state level how that's divvied up. Now, one danger here, and let me use an analogy. If you think of the economy as a vehicle, and you're driving ahead at a normal speed of say 40 miles an hour, and then you hit a big pothole called a recession, and let's even make it more dramatic. This pothole, that car actually stops and starts sinking down. Think of the stimulus bills that the previous three we had. Think of those as an effort to pull that car out of the pothole and get it going back up to 40 miles an hour. The concern that some economists have right now is that this stimulus bill is so big and it's being passed and will be implemented. Of course, it's going to be implemented over time for some of these things, several years. But the concern is it's going to be added to what's already in a dramatically improving economy where spending is going to go up, that we might get into a situation, where we have more businesses and more people trying to spend and buy products and services than the economy can produce. And when that happens, we have higher inflation. What happens in our system when you've got more demand, use the economics lingo, more demand compared to supply, prices go up. People want to buy more apples. There aren't as many apples to buy. Price of apples goes up. So there is some concern here. There's certainly not unanimous agreement on this by economists. You can read some economists who are really worried about this. You read economists that are saying, no, this is not going to happen. So that's one issue with my profession. We rarely get high degrees of agreement. But I think it's a possibility. So that's why I say it's a danger that we could be looking at higher inflation rates, probably wouldn't see them until the summer and the fall. And what am I talking about? What I'm talking about going from an inflation rate that for about the last decade has averaged between 1% and 2% a year to maybe an inflation rate that's averaging between 3% and 4% a year. In fact, I think Wells Fargo just came out with their forecast that we could see 3% inflation by mid-year. Now, I should say that is still not bad. When I came to NC State in 1978, the big issue was inflation. And inflation for several years from the late 70s to the early 80s, each year ran above 10%. Some of you who are older remember that. I think we had one year we had 13% inflation rate. So not talking about that, but we are talking about noticeably higher. Right now, what you see is, number one, gas prices are going up, and that's primarily a result of, again, people are getting back on the road, people are driving more, and the supply of oil that, of course, produces gas has not been keeping up, largely because of what Mideast countries like Saudi Arabia, and Russia's in on this too, have been doing, because they cut their production in order to put a floor under prices, because oil prices really collapsed during the pandemic. So we need to watch and see what they do. If they start to loosen up, then that should level off the gas prices. The other issue is, if you look at the last inflation report, a lot of food commodity prices are going up in grocery stores. And I think what's happening there is, if you think of food supply, there are really two users of our food supply, restaurants and grocery stores and supermarkets. And what happened during the pandemic, when the pandemic started, the restaurants were shut down. And so there was a scramble so people moved from buying their food, they moved from, at least they weren't able to buy the part of their budget they devoted to restaurants, that moved over to the grocery store area. And that was one reason why we had shortages initially, because the food supply folks couldn't make that adjustment. It's not, you might think it's easy, it's not. Now we're going the opposite direction. where restaurants are beginning to open up. So the food supply folks are now supplying those, and they're having to, at least in the short term, cut back somewhat on their supply to grocery stores. And so that's why you're seeing some prices in grocery stores go up. I think that's temporary. I'm not worried about that as much as I am as about the gas prices. So watch for inflation. Another danger is the stock market. Now you might say, well, Walden, what are you talking about? Stock market's been going up, up, up. Why are you worried about that? Well, we always have to ask the question, why is the stock market going up? Is it going up because businesses are going better? Or is there something maybe artificial going on? And there's some economists who worry there's something artificial going on. If you look, for example, at the first stimulus checks that came out of the first stimulus bill, the $2 trillion, those were the $2,000 stimulus checks. If you look at how the average person, the average now person used that, they split it about three ways. Third on spending, a third on paying down on debt, and a third investing. Now, I can't tell you where the investment money went, but I suspect a substantial part went into the stock market, because that's about the only place you can get a good rate of return now. And what some economists are worried about now is we might repeat that this time around, where we're going to have a lot of money going to the stock market. That'll bid prices up further, and which is all good if you're an owner of stocks. But the concern is once that money stops, if we don't have any further stimulus plans, and who knows where, then the stock market might react as to say, where'd the sugar go? The sugar's gone. And you might say it was a sugar high in the stock market, and you might have a major pullback. Now, I am not a stock market predictor. I gave that up a long time ago when I came out of graduate school. I thought I could do it. You can't. So all I can do is warn you here that do watch that. This is not something that's going to happen tomorrow, but that is a potential danger. So I think in conclusion, you could see in 2023 or 2022 or 2023 a stock market correction. You add to that the continuing fact that we've not gotten the employment picture back totally. And if inflation goes up, you could get higher interest rates. Usually that's the case, which would really hurt sectors that are really benefited from low interest rates, like the housing market. And so you could see a drop there. And you can create a scenario where in 2022, 2023, we may have a recession. And I don't say all this to hope for it, certainly. But I do think it's my responsibility to at least share with you some of the scenarios that at least some people think may be unwinding. Certainly watch trend when you hear a report, the inflation numbers came out. Pay attention there. Watch what interest rates are doing. Now, on top of this, I should say, and I was hearing a news report on this morning, now that the Biden administration has gotten their COVID relief bill through, that the next thing they're working on is an infrastructure package. Now, I'm all for infrastructure. I just finished serving on the NC First Transportation Commission. We have a report, those of you who are, I don't know if we have any General Assembly members, but you I think have access to that, where we're working at long-run and transportation needs in the state, and we have a lot of them. If you look at the money that we're predicted to have, we've got a gap there. So I'm all, and infrastructures, you know this, but many of you know this better than I do, the infrastructure is absolutely key to economic development. So, and the Trump administration tried to get, or at least talked about, an infrastructure package, and it never went anywhere. So looks like the Biden administration is going to come forth with an infrastructure package. So roads, bridges, electric grid, a lot of worry there with hacking. We need to upgrade that. And hopefully high-speed internet, particularly to rural areas. Now, that's all good. I'm all in favor of that. I think it's high rates of return. I think it's great for the economy. Again, the issue comes, if this is another couple trillion then of spending on top of what we're already spending, are we going to overheat the economy? And is that going to even lead to higher inflation and higher interest rates? And could that set us up for a fall that is a recession, as I previously prescribed? So This is hard to really work through because I think clearly we have needs here in infrastructure, but we've already added $6 trillion in the national debt with this, the latest package. And if we're talking about another couple of trillion, you know, then obviously that's going on to the national debt. So do watch. And I'm sure there's going to be a debate about that, but that looks to be next, infrastructure. Always like to end on good news, though. I think a lot of states are coming out of this pandemic worried. I think my wife, Mary, is from New York State, and I think New York State is worried, especially in the city. The big metropolitan areas, you have reports of people moving out. You have reports of people saying, I don't want to live in a big city where we're shoulder to shoulder with people with maybe another virus happening. So there are some states, maybe California, throw in there too, and some others who probably are feeling wounded by this pandemic. Their reputation has been tarnished. That's not the case, in my opinion, with North Carolina, and certainly with your area, Asheville region. I think if anything, we're coming out of this with our reputation enhanced. If you look at the numbers, the two key metrics that people follow in comparing states and how they've done during the pandemic, it's death rates per capita and job loss per capita. And if you look at those metrics for North Carolina, we are, I think, in the bottom third of states on both of those. And we look very good compared to most of the states in the Southeast. So I think that sends a good sign. And then I quite frankly think if you're going to have people leaving New York, New Jersey metro area, California, maybe Chicago, if you're going to have people moving, and where are they going to go? What areas are they going to consider? Well, they're certainly going to consider North Carolina. What's not to like about North Carolina? Beautiful climate, beautiful amenities from beach to mountains to Piedmont, great educational institutions, known as a state that is conducive to attracting businesses, a state that has been growing, a state that's really remade itself. I've been here now 43 years, and when I came, we were still very dependent upon tobacco, textiles, furniture, and those are great industries. I don't disparage them at all, but they've gone into the twilight, and we have remade ourselves, tech, pharmaceuticals, education, medical care, finance. And it's very interesting. I'm getting long-winded here, but if you contrast how North Carolina has dealt with the demise of textiles, furniture, and tobacco to how South Carolina has done it, South Carolina's gone a different direction. They've gone the manufacturing, and they've been very good at it. We went in the other direction. We went and created new industries, attracted different kinds of industries, et cetera. So that's actually a good comparison. There's a lot you can read about that on how the two states pursued a different strategy. So I think North Carolina, and certainly the Asheville region, is going to come out of this thinking, looking very good. I think people are going to view this area, our state, as a safe state. And I mean that in the sense of safe from the virus, as best you can be. Safe in terms of running your business, making a livelihood, et cetera. So I would not be surprised if our population growth rate trends and economic growth rate trends post-pandemic actually take a jump. That's something I'm going to be following very, very closely. So let me stop there. If you want to do questions through chat, I guess that is fine. My cat buddy is not available to chat, but he usually is sleeping. So I'm what you're left with if you want to send me any questions. Is that what we want to do, Nathan? Let me sign off and just wait for questions.
Yes sir. Okay. You can, I guess, end the screen sharing. And there's a few questions in the chat, and we can go over those. I was going to start. You mentioned the outlook for the western part of the state, and you think North Carolina is bright. What is your take on remote work? You know, I think we, prior to the pandemic, there were a lot of people in Western North Carolina who lived here, but probably worked someplace else. With increased broadband accessibility and a more willingness of employers to allow their employees to work remotely, How do you think that will impact Western North Carolina and our state?
Well, I think it'll be a plus. I mean, first of all, Western North Carolina is a part of our state that has been growing. It's interesting, you've been diversifying your economy. I mean, mostly tourism led you. Now you're into manufacturing, Pratt Whitney, other things going on. And the viewpoint among a lot of economic developers that I read about and follow is that what young people especially want is not just a job, not just a place to live, but they want amenities. They're interested in the broader picture. And I think that fits very nicely in with the western part of our state. So I think your growth will be certainly commensurate, if not faster than the state. Remote working, I think, has been on the employment side or on the business side, that's been the big game changer during the pandemic. We went from these are national numbers, 80% of people working remotely prior to the pandemic, 40% working remotely at the height of the pandemic. Now it's settled, it's pulled back some between 20 and 30%. And a lot of experts think that's where it's going to stay. I think, and I probably said this to you last time, I think that if we do get consistent, reliable, high-speed internet anywhere, wherever you are in North Carolina, and I think that's possible. And then watch the infrastructure bill coming out of Washington, or at least being proposed. But also watch, I mentioned this to you last time, Elon Musk with his Starlink plan, which he claims he's going to have ready by the end of the year. That's where we'll get our internet from the satellite. And this is not the current satellite, where the satellite's 25,000 miles up. These are 500 miles up, so much better reception and continuity. But I think if we get high-speed, reliable internet anywhere in the state, city, suburb, exurb, rural, you could see this being a game changer for what we call, is commonly called the urban-rural divide, where if you look certainly this century, massive growth in urban areas, slight growth, if any, in rural areas. This could be the game changer because now you can have people saying, you know what, I don't want to live in a big city. I'm afraid. I want some elbow room. Plus, you can get a better house for a cheaper price in the rural area. You can sort of commune with them. A lot of people say living in nature is good for you, your health, et cetera. I could see that taking off, and I could see developers flocking to take advantage of that. So, yeah, I think and remote working clearly would be a part of that. So I think number one, remote working is here to stay at a higher level. And number two, it could go even higher and could really cause a big shift in the geographical sorting of people and businesses in our state.
All right. And prior to the pandemic, the large cities, major metro areas were taking a big share of the economic growth in the country. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess the $1 million or the $1 billion question is, you know, will that continue post-pandemic? There was a question about telecom workers. Mentioned broadband expansion, the need to do that. There's working. Do you see that type of growth expanding, like in the utility sector, or I think at one time solar installation jobs were the fastest growing job in North Carolina. Where do you see those hot jobs?
Well, it's estimated that it would take about $200 to $250 billion for the federal government to finance high-speed internet access to everyone in the country. And the estimate right now is 20 to 40%, that's the range of rural North Carolinians don't even have access to high-speed internet. So if they do it the way we've done it so far, laying cable, yeah, that's going to create a lot of, and let's say the federal government foot the bill, $250 billion. Yeah, you're going to create a lot of jobs there. On the other hand, if we go the route of Elon Musk, and actually it's rumored there are a lot of other billionaires who are trying to get in on this, where we get our internet from the sky, but much different than what people are doing now. These are, as I said, low flying satellites. Then you're not going to have those jobs on the ground. It's going to be all different. There's going to be people shooting satellites up in the air, and obviously a lot of tech people doing that, working the system. So I could see in the next 5 to 10 years, and of course, as an economist, I believe competition is good, a competition between the traditional way internet was provided versus this new way.
You, for the unemployment and certainly our unemployment rates have gone down significantly, as you indicated. But even in our area, I think Asheville Metro is now third or fourth lowest in the state. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, we were the highest ranked unemployment in the state. But we're seeing a larger percentage of that unemployed population being the long-term unemployed, mm-hmm. who we know have greater scarring effects from being unemployed for long periods of time. Have you done much research on that, or have you seen that? And I think especially that, a greater share of that long-term unemployed is older workers.
Typically we worry about people who are unemployed for longer than a year, let's say. And in a normal recession, I would be worried about that. This has not been a normal recession. A fair number of those folks who've been unemployed for a year or longer, it's either because they're maybe they work in a restaurant and the restaurant's just not open, so it wasn't anything due to them. It was the fact that there's still shutdowns, and not saying anything disparaging about that. Or there are people who maybe could have gone back to work, but they've got kids at home who weren't in school, they've got to take care of them. Or they've got family members who were sick or recovering from being sick. So that long-term unemployment number, I'm not quite as worried as much about that as I would be in a typical recession. Now, that said, I come back to, again, my point that I think the job market is going to be different. And so the question is, if you are someone who has skills that are going to be now done by machine or robot, then you're at risk of being unemployed for a long, long time, maybe forever, unless you get retrained.
Are you in the school of thought that this pandemic has accelerated those technological changes?
Oh, yes.
Would impact us in 10 years, yep. are going to impact us now or in the next year or so?
Yes. Someone said it better than me, that something that would have taken 10 years has probably been compressed to 3. Yes, you're absolutely right. I've done so many of these, I forget what I've told a group that I'm repeating, but a good example of this is, I don't know that you have many in Western North Carolina, but food processing, the meatpacking plants. You know, we have the largest in Bladen County, Smithfield. Those are highly labor intensive, people working shoulder to shoulder along an assembly line, like cutting and packaging, et cetera. And that was deemed an essential industry. So those folks continue to work, although there were some outbreaks there. We've already heard reports and seen reports, or I have at least, of meatpacking plants in the Midwest are getting rid of their human workers and they're installing robots. So I think that's the writing on the wall. So yeah, and that's something probably that we would have foreseen out 10 years, but now it's happened in a year. So yeah, very definitely the what we call technological unemployment, which has been one of the signatures of this century, because technology is becoming so adept at doing things. The next iteration up on that is artificial intelligence. That's where you're going to get jobs that someone's doing, like an accountant, bookkeeping job, could very well be done by a robot using technological unemployment. So it's not just factory jobs. So yeah, you're absolutely right. This has all been accelerated. And my point is, number one, we need to know this is coming. And number two, we need to be, I think we need to be proactive in terms of when it's clear, like let's take the meatpacking plant example. When it's clear those plants are going to shift over to robots, we'll know in advance those people are going to be let go, and we need to be proactive in getting communication with those people, see what their skills are, what kind of skills could they upgrade to, obviously involve our great educational institutions, but also try to involve the private sector in things like apprenticeships and on-the-job training.
Well, Dr. Walden, last question. This is probably the most difficult of them all. If you were the king for a day, or Senator Schumer, or Speaker Pelosi, President Biden, be able to craft a relief package, do you think this $1.9 trillion package was the right, the money went the right ways? I know economists would always, you know, there's always a different points of view there. I know you've mentioned the scale of it on top of the other legislation, you know, the $6 trillion, the concern is overheating the economy. But as far as the money going in the right places, percent that, you know, is going to direct payments to individuals, to small businesses through PPP, other types of sources. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the bill, and I have, I split it half and half. I think you can clearly say about a half of that, about a trillion, maybe 800 billion, but we'll sprout off to a trillion. Certainly is COVID related, with the checks, unemployment compensation, the things for hospitals and educational institutions. Yeah, around a trillion, I think, would have sailed through. I think it's the other trillion that had question marks behind it. And if I were to make any changes, if we were going to stick with that number, or one of my disappointments, I guess, would be that I didn't see any money, and I may have missed it, significant money for the kind of retraining that I think we're going to need. That's what I would have done different. If I had Senator Schumer's ear or Speaker Pelosi's ear, I would have said, you know, among that second trillion, maybe put off some of these things and really carve out some money, some good money for the states to use for retraining, because I think that's going to be an issue. I think that would have been a home run for everyone, wherever you sat politically.
And certainly workforce development generally is, yeah. Has a lot of bipartisan support. And that is true in our, from a workforce development standpoint, there was no additional money in the core workforce programs through the federal programs. So I don't know if that'll come later. Certainly if there's significant disruptions, I think a lot of economists, and I don't know if you're in this boat, but really our unemployment system, our retraining system is really outdated in the way we deploy those funds. And we really need to look at that because the way technology is changing. You have 30 seconds on that?
Yeah, well, one thing I might say is, and I don't know if Drew's still with me, who could carry this to the governor. I've been fortunate to be on some Zooms with the governor, and I know he listens very, very well to ideas. I think maybe what North Carolina ought to think about, and I'm not a bureaucratic person, but think about establishing a blue ribbon commission that involves educators, business leaders, political leaders, et cetera, to really try to do a deep dive into what I think is going to be a real challenge of retraining a lot of people in the state, so we can get ready for that. And get collaboration going between all the sectors, public sector, private sector, education sector, that will be involved in this. So there you go, Drew, idea.
So with that, we will end the call. But Dr. Walden, thank you for joining us. Again, thank you for joining us last year. Doesn't seem like that long ago, but you've been always very gracious to us, and we appreciate your wisdom and your insights into these really macro challenges that our communities face, as well as our state and nation, really their global challenges. So thank you so much. Again, Drew, thank you for joining us today. Again, next week, we're going to have representatives from the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, North Carolina League of Municipalities, to speak about how the assistance to local governments will play out, the restrictions on those funds, how those funds can be used, and any compliance requirements. It's the, you know, good news. It's a little different than the CARES Act funds earlier, which were very tightly prescribed, but we'll try to learn more about how that will work. So that will be next Thursday at 1:00. Again, these calls are recorded. If you have any questions of me, reach out to me at nathan@landasky.org. You go to our Land of Sky website at landasky.org to learn more. And again, thank you for joining us. Hope everyone stays safe, stays well, and we appreciate everything you do for our region.